Seth has been Palace. Who the? Oh my God! It's Samoa Joe from NXT.
The two-time NXT champion Samoa Joe is on Monday Night Raw.
Triple H is heavy. Samoa Joe attacking and assaulting Seth Rollins.
We're not the kind of guys to say we told you so, but we told you so.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
It's the Super Bowl Sunday edition of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, episode 481. For Sunday, February 5th, 2017, I am the Solid Monster. New England Patriots against the Atlanta Falcons tonight in Super Bowl 51. I'm picking the Patriots. What do you think? Is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback of all time? I ask this because we had a passionate debate about this at the office the other day. More so the other people I was with had a passionate debate about this. I wouldn't say I'm as passionate as they are when it comes to football. But I'd vote for Brady. But, you know, there was also a lot of love for Joe Montana. I'm sure the football fanatics listening to this will chime in with their thoughts. But you mentioned Brady's name to some people, and man, the reaction this guy gets. Very polarizing. He is the John Cena of the NFL. Want to make mention of this here up front. Very proud of this. We three-peated as the show of the year in the 2017 Wrestling Radio Awards. We outlasted a lot of other great shows. We also won for Media Interview of the Year for my interview with Diamond Dallas Page. So I want to say thank you to everybody who took the time to vote for the Sound Off. To do that 3 years in a row is pretty cool. So thank you very much to everybody who helped out with that. And also, the Sound Off was number one on the Stitcher sports charts last week and number 21 out of all shows on Stitcher Radio. So again, thank you for the love. Audible continues to offer listeners of the Sound Off a free trial of the Audible service for 30 days. Just use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. We'll allow you to sample the service. They have over 180,000 different book titles to choose from. And among those, you could pick plenty of wrestling audiobooks. They've got tons of them, including The Death of WCW. I know a lot of you cashed in on that. So you get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. So even if you cancel before the end of your 30 days, that book belongs to you. It's a free book on us. Sample the service. I think you might like it, but use our link when you do so. audibletrial.com/solomonster. Help support the podcast. And unless you continue on with your trial, doesn't cost you a thing. I know there's a good number of people who have become subscribers to the service, so use our link and check it out. Also, if you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. PayPal button's on the right-hand side, and if you make a $10 donation or more, you get yourself a shout-out here on the podcast and a nickname. And we have a roll call here, PayPal roll call for our VIPs. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake, Massgrave Micah Harshaw, The Seattle Saint Marco Wallace, The Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, The Five Tool Player Adam Bartolo, Joseph Jam My Fist in Your Eye Justice, The Thunder from Down Under, Jack Williams. Carolina Chaos, Thomas Towery. Wise Guy, Jonathan Ellis. Guitar Hero, John Kiernan. Jerome Glorious King, who wants to say, hey, Jessica Flores, good luck on your job interview at Comcast. So thank you to everybody who made a donation in support of the podcast this week. Again, you can always do so anytime you want on thesolomonster.com. Get yourself a shout out here on the show. There's a lot to get to. I mean, really, when isn't there a lot to get to? I recorded three podcasts, basically, last weekend, over 3 hours total of audio. Of course, episode 480. Also, my NXT TakeOver San Antonio review, which is up on our YouTube channel. And my hour-long Royal Rumble review, which also went up as a sound-off extra for all of my YouTube subscribers. Thank you to the nearly 80,000 of you who have watched that video so far. Randy Orton wins his second Royal Rumble, entering at number 23. You know who else drew number 23? This guy right here in our Royal Rumble pool on Facebook. Finally, I think I drew Goldust last year. I was so pissed. So when I heard Orton's music, I felt pretty good about my chances. Today is the final pool. By the way, with all the winners in our contest, myself excluded, I'm taking myself out of the final pool for obvious reasons. I will not be, you know, buying myself a shirt or giving myself a shout out or anything like that. But I am going to be picking first place, second place, and third place winners in the final Rumble pool later on in the podcast. We'll do that towards the end. And we got to build anticipation for this. Got to draw a big overrun. Big quarter hour. Our Royal Rumble Twitter poll, over 43, almost 4,400 votes. 45% thumbs up, 55% thumbs down. Very much a mixed bag. My take on it, two excellent championship matches. Kevin Owens retaining over Roman Reigns. John Cena winning title number 16 from AJ Styles. Basically the opposite of how I thought it was going to go down. I thought it was going to be AJ, especially the way he was kind of just talked down to in the weeks leading up to the match. I thought they'd let him go a little bit longer. He'd somehow pull out a win over Cena one more time. And Roman Reigns would leave with the championship. And they did the opposite with the two title matches. Remember when I said this right after the show in my Rumble review? But they had a fantastic match. I can't say enough good things about the match itself. And also, as I said on Twitter, I can't wait to see Dave Meltzer give that match 4¾ stars. For all the people on Twitter who were saying this was better than Tanahashi. This was better than Okada and Omega. If that was 6 stars, this was at least, you know, 5¾. I can't wait to see Meltzer give this 4¾ just to see people's heads explode. Welp. I'll give you one guess what the star rating was that Meltzer gave this match. 4¾ stars. And just as I predicted, there were, in fact, some people, many people, whose heads did explode. Plenty of debate about the match and was it better than their SummerSlam match and all this stuff. Even in our own, you know, Facebook group, we had some of that going on. It's so comical to me. Like, I could see it coming from a mile away. It's a subjective thing. I don't see why people get all bent out of shape about these things, the star ratings and everything. I didn't think Okada and Omega was 6 stars, whatever the hell that means. I didn't even think it was the best Okada match I've ever seen. And I gave you 3 examples of Okada matches that I thought were better. But I don't, you know, begrudge the guy for saying it. I mean, that match ended up being talked about, the Okada match, far more because he gave that thing 6 stars than it would have had he not have done that. He did them a favor. But it's all subjective, you know. But I knew people would pick that rating apart, and I just laugh. I just laugh when that happens. But it was an excellent match. You know, I happen to think their SummerSlam match was better. Maybe because I saw it live without commentary in the building. Maybe it's because of the finish with AJ beating him clean in the middle, which was far more satisfying to me. But you know, both matches had those false finishes where they each kick out of the other's move a billion times. But I thought the SummerSlam match was at least a little bit better. This one was great too. As it stands, it will be John Cena versus Randy Orton at WrestleMania. Actually, it'll be John Cena against Randy Orton this Tuesday on SmackDown in a non-title match. Remember what I said on the podcast a few years back? I believe my exact words were, if we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. And I'm not going to say whether or not I follow through on my threat when the Rumble was over, but Seth Rollins did get hurt the very next day, so I'll leave that to your imagination. There is zero chance they do John Cena versus Randy Orton at WrestleMania. But still, just to think about it, just to think about the idea that John Cena versus Randy Orton, as of right now, as of this moment, is our WrestleMania main event. You know what? It's hard to believe that for all the matches those two have had, and they have had a lot of matches, a lot of pay-per-view matches, a lot of TV matches. Of all the matches they've had, Cena and Orton have never had a singles match against one another at WrestleMania. I think that's incredible. 5,000 matches A rivalry that Michael Cole talks about like it's Ali Frazier. And the closest they came was a triple threat at WrestleMania 24 with Triple H. Not one singles match at WrestleMania. I'd like to keep it that way. Save us. Bray Wyatt, please. Save us in the chamber next Sunday. The Walking Dead, by the way, is back next Sunday also for all the Walking Dead fans out there. Speaking of the Walking Dead, The Undertaker. Undertaker looked awful in the Royal Rumble. He just really did. It was sad to watch. He also looked like he put on about 30 pounds, although if he's just coming off surgery, I get that. I understand that. But the way he was moving around in there, and when people would punch him or something and he would kind of stumble, it was sad. I mean, it was really sad to see him like that. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the match he had with Hulk Hogan at Judgment Day back in 2002, where he won the Undisputed title in that match from Hogan. Hogan was the one, I mean, he was in great shape, don't get me wrong, but Hogan was the one who was looking super old in that match. And there was that one spot where The Undertaker tried to get him up for a chokeslam and Hogan didn't go, so he tried it again, and this time he got it, but it was the ugliest looking chokeslam I've ever seen. Hogan was right around the same age at that time that Undertaker is now, maybe even younger. And, you know, when I heard about Hogan's hip going out on him in the middle of a match with Ric Flair on that tour of Australia that the two of them did about 7 or 8 years ago, and when I saw Hogan wrestle Sting at Bound for Glory in TNA, he did the best he could. They kept the match short, smoke and mirrors, the whole deal. But I just remember thinking, like, this guy has had 8 back surgeries. Like, he needs to stop. There has to be an end point here. It has to be the end for him. That's all I kept thinking. You know, I don't want to remember him that way. I probably will. Unfortunately, you know, Hogan, when it comes to hanging on for too long and the back injury stuff and the sex tape stuff and the divorce stuff. I mean, the guy's had a lot of shit that's happened to him in his life that has... somewhat tarnished whatever legacy he had built, but just to see these guys cling and hang on a little bit too long to where they're out there and they just look old and crippled and broken down and past their prime, whatever you want to call it. Like, I don't want to remember these guys like that. Andre the Giant, at the end of his run, he was embarrassing to watch. Not saying Undertaker is as bad as Andre was at the end, but at this rate, you know what? He may not be too far off. I saw Meltzer reported that Undertaker was hurting pretty bad backstage when the match was over. I think the match with Roman Reigns, which is clearly the direction they're going in for WrestleMania based on what they did at the Rumble. I mean, Reigns eliminated The Undertaker, and The Undertaker mouthed to him, "This ain't over," or "I'm not done with you," something along those lines. Clearly, that is the match they are building to at WrestleMania this year. And I think that if that's the case, then the match with Roman Reigns needs to be the end. I mean, I was hoping it would be John Cena. I even floated AJ Styles a few weeks ago. I mean, the best opponents for him were either Cena, which is still a marquee match, I think, or just in terms of an opponent who I think he could work with and having the best possible match with. There's no one better than AJ Styles. And clearly, they're not going to be doing either one of those things. But I think if you're going to do the match with Reigns, then you know what? He could do the honors for Vince's handpicked guy and then ride off into the darkness. Unless the plan is for him to lose, Roman Reigns, that is the plan for him to lose, because I assume he's winning. But, you know, maybe the plan is for Roman to lose a hard-fought match, and then afterwards he can destroy The Undertaker, and he can just snap, and he can turn heel. If not, I don't see what is accomplished by having a broken-down Undertaker beating your big, young, super-destroyer in Roman Reigns. Roman's got to beat him. And again, I'm seeing all these rumors about AJ Styles against Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. If that's the best they could come up with for AJ, then I would rather they book AJ against The Undertaker instead of Roman, because, again, you know AJ's going to give that guy the best possible match he could have. That would be a cool way to see The Undertaker go out. Like, I think back to some of the recent matches he's had. Obviously, the matches with Shawn Michaels were just tremendous, but even the match with CM Punk, which was the match of the night at WrestleMania 29, that would have been, you know what? That would have been a high note for him to go out on when you really think back to it. I think that was probably, that was the last great match that he had at WrestleMania. And you had the tie-in with Paul Bearer, who was always linked to The Undertaker, and he had just passed away. And that final visual of him grabbing the urn, now that he got the urn back, he had vanquished CM Punk. He has the urn, he salutes the urn. Like, it was, you know, that was a pretty cool moment. And I think that would have been, it almost looked like The Undertaker was about to cry. Like, he looked emotional at the end of that match because, again, his friend had passed away. Looking back on it, 2020 hindsight, that would have been a great moment to go out on, but they didn't do it. And I think having the kind of match he could probably have with AJ, that would be a good way for him, I think, to go out on something of a high note, because I've yet to see a bad AJ Styles match in WWE. And you know that if you take that guy in WrestleMania, you put him in the ring with The Undertaker, he's going to go out there and he's going to give it 125%. And The Undertaker, I mean, he's in rough shape, but he's not exactly completely crippled yet. I'm sure he can go out there and do his part. So I know I'm just kind of blowing smoke here that this is all pie in the sky, but I really wish they would, if he's got to wrestle, I wish they would go down that road instead. And obviously it would be a much bigger match for AJ Styles. But I just think Roman is the wrong opponent for him right now. This match, if they do it, okay, this Roman Reigns Undertaker match is about 4 years too late. Everyone was talking about the Samoa Joe idea that I pitched this week, you know, over a year ago, that they finally used this week. But there was another idea that I pitched 4 years ago that involved the Shield battling the Undertaker at WrestleMania. If you remember, they had laid out the Undertaker on SmackDown, the Shield did. Undertaker had that match with Dean Ambrose. They gave him a triple power bomb through the announce table. And for Mania the following year, it might have been the one in New Orleans where Lesnar ended the streak. My idea was Undertaker goes for his revenge against the Shield for what they had done to him, because we hadn't seen him. The last time we had seen Undertaker, the Shield put him out. It only made sense for him to come back and get revenge and pick him off one by one. And it was obvious even back then that Roman was their Samoan Cena. That's how they saw him. He was going to be the heir apparent. My idea was, why not do a gauntlet match where he would wrestle Rollins or Ambrose first? Probably Rollins. Rollins, I think, would give him a real good match. Taker would beat him. Then in comes Dean Ambrose. And obviously that match is a little more competitive. It's tougher, but he finds a way to win. Undertaker beats Dean Ambrose. Okay, maybe Rollins interferes and it backfires so Rollins doesn't look totally weak, or Ambrose doesn't look totally weak. And the final boss, so to speak, for The Undertaker to beat would be Roman Reigns. And Reigns would prove to be too much for him, and Roman Reigns would pin The Undertaker at WrestleMania and break the streak. Okay, I pitched that 4 years ago, and it was just an idea on how to end the streak if WWE insisted on ending it. I wasn't a fan of ending the streak. If it were up to me, he'd still be undefeated. But if the goal here, or if Undertaker was like, I gotta, you know, do the honors, I gotta lose. Whoever, it seems like it was Vince's decision, but whoever's decision it was, if that's how it had to be, that's the idea that I pitched at the time. Okay? And then you use that, what you can also do is use that whole situation as the first seed to plant in the eventual breakup of the Shield, because you've got all three Shield members now going around claiming credit for breaking the streak. In reality, it was Roman Reigns that did, right? And it causes jealousy and whatnot, and eventually you do the split. Anyway, point is, that ship sailed a long time ago. That ship sailed once the streak was broken by Brock. Roman gains nothing. At least as a babyface, he gains nothing from beating Old Man Taker at WrestleMania this year. The only thing he earns is more hate and more scorn from the people who already hate the guy's guts. Why fuel that fire even more? It's obvious they want this guy to be loved. Why won't you love Roman Reigns? We really, really, really want you to like him. So, if that's their goal, what the hell are they doing? The only thing that makes sense is that they're building to a heel turn. Otherwise, this makes absolutely no sense. I mean, in Vince's mind, I'm sure it does. Two of the biggest stars on the roster, passing the torch, however he actually views this. But he seems to have a completely different sense of reality from everybody else right now. At least when it comes to this guy. I mean, if the plan is to turn him, it's the only way I could justify the whole thing, then that's fine. But if you're going to do that, you got to go all the way with it. And so people say, oh, they should turn Roman heel. And I agree, but I've seen WWE do this before, where they kind of turn somebody, or it looks like they're turning somebody, but they really don't. If they're going to do it, you got to go all the way with it. You can't half-ass it, okay? You can't do that. John Cena very often will hint at being a dick on TV. He did it with AJ just last week. Shawn Michaels super kicked Hulk Hogan in the face. And Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper. It was great, right? In the build-up to their match at SummerSlam, him and Hogan. And then as soon as SummerSlam was over and he threw his little hissy fit on TV the next night, he was right back to being a babyface. You can't do that with Roman Reigns. If you're going to turn him, you got to go all the way. He's tired of being screwed over for the US title. He's tired of being screwed over for the Universal title. And he's tired of being screwed over for no good reason by you people who keep booing me every single week. Bret Hart told the American wrestling fans, coast to coast, to kiss his ass. Well, Roman needs to tell those same fans to do the same thing. And if they want to use Undertaker as an instrument to help get him there, that would pique my interest. That's about the only thing about this match, honestly, that would pique my interest. But don't put Roman in the heel role heading into WrestleMania. But when Mania's over, things go back to normal. Or they shake hands and everything is okay. Because what you're going to end up with, and The Rock found out about this the hard way at the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago, when he raised Roman's hand to endorse him and was showered by boos. Now, I don't know if The Undertaker's going to raise Roman's hand at the end or not, but hey, you're headed for the exact same scenario if you play it out that way. If you're going to turn him, do it the right way. And I think that would be the best thing for him. We had no Samoa Joe in the Royal Rumble, but I did say in my Rumble review that I did that night, I was withholding judgment until I saw what they had planned for Raw the next night. I thought maybe they would go with an offshoot of the idea that I first pitched over a year ago, where Triple H brings Joe in as his heavy, and that was the word that I used. Last year, it would have been to wrestle Roman Reigns when I originally pitched it. This time, it would have been to wrestle Seth Rollins. So, you can imagine the giant shit-eating grin on my face Monday night as I watched Samoa Joe attack Seth Rollins on behalf of Triple H. Better late than never. Better late than never. My thoughts on the Rumble match are unchanged, despite what they did there. My thoughts are the same. I thought it was disappointing. Some people thought it was the greatest Royal Rumble in years. I don't know what they were watching. They were probably blinded by all the big names. There were a lot of big names. There were some cool moments, you know, Undertaker and Goldberg face to face. When it was over, I was disappointed. I was underwhelmed by the Royal Rumble. That has not changed. It looked, I was happy to see Joe on Raw the next night. It looked as though we were headed for Samoa Joe against Seth Rollins at Fastlane, with Rollins getting Triple H at WrestleMania. But now, those plans have been thrown into disarray. Seth Rollins re-injured his knee during the segment with Joe at the end of Raw. In the Observer, I know Meltzer said that the belief from those in the company is that it is a torn MCL, which would be about an 8-week recovery time. 8 weeks from today is WrestleMania. Blake on Twitter, shout out to Blake, he called Rollins the Derrick Rose of WWE. I don't know that I would go that far. Not yet, anyway. That's being a little extreme. But this is the second major knee injury to the same knee. It looked like it happened when Joe went to take him down for the Coquina Clutch. Rollins sort of caught his leg in the mat. It got bent awkwardly on the way down. I've seen the footage that I'm sure many of you have seen from the very end, where you could hear Joe say something or ask him something. Apparently it's, are you okay? And Rollins mouths back, I hope so. To everybody saying it's a work. It's not a work. Now, possible the injury ends up not being as serious and it's all systems go for WrestleMania. That's the big question right now. It's not a guarantee that Seth Rollins is out of the match at WrestleMania. But if he misses it, and there's a very good chance he will, this would be the second straight WrestleMania that Seth Rollins misses with a knee injury if he is indeed off the show. And the second straight year that their plans for him against Triple H have been foiled. Because that was going to be the match last year until he got hurt a few months before. Maybe the match is cursed. Again, maybe there was a certain voodoo curse. I don't know. But the question that WWE has to struggle with now is, if it is an MCL tear, if that is an accurate diagnosis, and the average recovery is 8 weeks, WrestleMania is in 8 weeks, do you stay the course, keep Seth Rollins against Triple H on the books with the hope that he'll be okay enough to do the match, you know, tape up the knee and go out there? I think that would be a huge mistake. And if I were WWE, I would go with Plan B. Because even if Rollins heals up quicker and he can do the match, you know, when you're cutting things that close, it's your biggest show of the year, this was one of the biggest matches on the card, you can't take that chance. You just cannot take that chance. And the last thing you want to do is rush the guy back too soon from a knee injury. That would probably not be the best idea either, especially when it's the same knee that he had reconstructive surgery on. I just don't think it's worth it. So if it is an MCL tear, 8 week recovery, I pull him. I take him out of the match at WrestleMania. If he heals up in time and he can be at the show, I mean, I would imagine he'll be at the show no matter what. He could do a run-in on Triple H's match to keep the feud going. I mean, what could they even do with him on TV with a bad wheel to even build up the match at this point if that is the injury? I mean, what do you do? You know, it's one thing if you got an elbow injury, an arm injury, a concussion. I mean, you can appear, you can do certain things. If it's a knee injury and a knee tear and he's going to be in a brace or a cast or crutches or something, what do you do with the guy? It really severely limits what you could even do to build up the match. And again, that's 8 weeks worth of buildup you got to keep in mind here. It just doesn't make sense to keep him in the match if that's going to be the case. It doesn't make sense. WWE is already working on alternative plans for Triple H at WrestleMania. Got to make sure he's got plans for the big show. They may have already settled on an idea. It sounds like tomorrow night they're gonna give us a big update on Rollins' condition, and we'll find out more at that point. I'm not even sure why Triple H has to have a match at WrestleMania. I mean, I know why. Can't give up that big payday. That, and also, you know, they're already working on the big elaborate entrance for him, right? We had the Terminator entrance a few years ago. Last year was that big, they had the giant stage with Stephanie as the Empress, and they always try to come up with something big for Triple H. And it takes a while, it could take a few months even, to kind of put everything together, and they've probably already bought and paid for the entrance, and now they have to use it, so we gotta come up with a match for him. But really, I mean, think about it. They've got Goldberg on the card this year. They've got Brock. They've got Undertaker. Triple H does not need to be wrestling on this card. But he will. And so, as I tweeted right after the news broke of Rollins' injury, the only opponent that I would be really interested in, and now, of course, we're seeing these reports that this is the match that WWE might be considering, of course, because it's the match that makes sense. And that is Triple H against Shane McMahon. And lo and behold, you have the CPW Insider and all these sites saying that that's exactly what WWE is considering. As they should. As they should. I mean, I think, you know, it would free up AJ Styles, first of all, to do something else other than wrestle Shane, which is great, because that match just doesn't excite me at all. Looks like Finn Balor won't be cleared until March. People have mentioned, you know, Finn's name. Actually, before I even talk about Finn, as far as Triple H Shane is concerned, to me, just for the promos alone, and playing off these possible real-life feelings between the two of them and talks of, you know, there's been a lot of chatter over the years about what their relationship is actually like and what does Shane actually think about Triple H and Stephanie kind of muscling in and being the ones to be the heir apparent when Vince either croaks or steps aside. You know, 15 years ago, everybody thought, hey, it's going to be Shane, and now it's the exact opposite. You know it's got to eat at him. And you think back to the Mick Foley podcast on the network when he interviewed Shane. It made me laugh when he did it. He was asking, you know, about Triple H. What are your thoughts on Triple H? Because he's saying all these great things about all these other people. And finally, Mick asked the question. And his response was, he makes my sister happy. And I was like, whoa, okay. You know? So I just think to put those two guys in a program together, just for the promos and the build alone, and injecting a little bit of that reality into it, it would make for great TV. But anyway, as far as Balor is concerned, you know, his name's been floated around. He's still kind of in the mix, and he did not get cleared. He saw a doctor right before the Rumble. He did not get cleared. Now it looks like he'll be cleared sometime in early March or mid-March. So even with Balor, you're kind of cutting it a little close, but he's going to be at WrestleMania. He'll be on the card. He'll be on the card in some way. even if it's in the freaking Battle Royal, I'm sure he'll be on that WrestleMania card. If you free up AJ Styles by doing Triple H against Shane, I'm just saying, if they're confident that they'll get Balor back in time, then, you know, AJ and Balor could be one road that they could, you know, go down. That could be an option for WrestleMania. They've got to have something good for AJ Styles to do. Again, he's been the MVP of that company for the last year. If he's not wrestling for the championship, that's fine, but they can't just throw him in a freaking ladder match or a freaking battle royal. You can't do that. You just can't do that. It would be a colossal waste. And that's why I laugh when I read those reports online after Wrestle Kingdom, you know, at the beginning of January, that WWE, all of a sudden, they were motivated to put together a great main event for WrestleMania that could rival Okada and Omega. I had a nice belly laugh over that when I read that. It's like, as though the key people involved in putting WrestleMania together give a shit about Okada against Kenny Omega. Like, if they cared that much, then AJ Styles would be wrestling in the main event. But that's not what they care about. That's not what makes the money. Look at how many shit main events we've gotten at WrestleMania over the years. And some of those WrestleMania, and I'll even point to last year. Last year's WrestleMania was really not that good. Triple H against Roman Reigns, I thought it was a bad match. It was boring, it was dull. It was not a good WrestleMania main event, but you know what? They made a shitload of money. WrestleMania every year makes them a ton of money. Undertaker and Shane McMahon, more than anything, is what probably got people to watch that show. It was the curiosity about Shane being back, Hell in a Cell, what crazy stunt is he going to do? That's what sells for them. You know, not always the best wrestling matches. But again, I just remember reading those reports, and it's like, maybe there is some legitimacy to that. Maybe it was the writers. I'm sure the writers probably all, you know, got together and watched that match at Wrestle Kingdom, and they were blown away by it, and they're like, man, we wish we could do something like that. You know, that I could buy, that the writers would want to try to top it. But the only thing that matters is what Vince wants, and the idea that Vince McMahon would care about that, I almost pulled a muscle. I laughed so hard. So with Triple H and Shane, you don't even have to have them wrestle if you don't want to. Yeah, you can have a one-on-one match, but you could do a Triple H Shane program and not even have them in the ring. You know, they could each pick a surrogate to face each other at WrestleMania. Joe can represent Raw. Here's an idea. Nakamura. He can represent SmackDown. Since I'm sure that's where he's going to end up anyway. And I can't say that I was overly impressed by all the Joe Nakamura matches I saw in NXT. I saw one that I thought was really, really good. The others, honestly, were a little disappointing to me. But, you know, Joe against Nakamura on the big stage of WrestleMania? I mean, that'd be a pretty cool match, I think. And, you know, I don't know. I didn't read the results of the tapings they did for NXT, so I don't know if they're setting up Nakamura for a rematch in Orlando with Bobby Roode or if they're moving on to someone else. But if not, if they are moving on to someone else, this would seem like a good spot for Nakamura to make his SmackDown debut. And since Joe went to Raw, as I always thought he would, people thought I was nuts. Why, Joe go to Raw? SmackDown needs him. And sure enough, Joe's on Raw. It just seems so obvious to me that that's where he's going to go. And yeah, you can argue that Raw has bigger names than SmackDown does, but it doesn't fucking matter when it's the same three names rotating in the main event every single week. You know, Jericho, Owens, Reigns, Jericho, Reigns, Owens, Jericho. You know, I don't give a shit how many other people they have on the roster. Who cares when it's the same freaking three people over and over again? You know, I was like, put Joe on Raw. That's the move that made sense. But now you got to put somebody on SmackDown. Nakamura would seem like, you know, the perfect person to put on that brand. But I could see it now. It's like, you know, Triple H is at ringside for the match. Maybe he gets involved. Seth Rollins, if he's okay to do so, runs in to attack Triple H. In all the chaos, Nakamura gets a win over Joe. So at least Joe doesn't have to take the clean, totally clean loss. I mean, hell, I mean, Joe could put Hunter in the clutch on Raw the next night because he blames him for losing. Makes him out to be even more of a badass destroyer. They have options. That's the point I'm trying to make here. They have options. This is why there's no need to rush Seth Rollins back or spend the next 8 weeks promoting a big match that may or may not happen. Now, of course, there's always the break the glass in case of emergency option where Vince McMahon can pick up the bat phone and call The Rock. We never did get that Rock Triple H match in Dallas last year. I would imagine with Rock's schedule, he's, I don't think he'd be able to do a match on short notice and all the promotion for it, but I would say that would be the least likely of all the scenarios. I think Triple H against Shane is the way to go, or you do the surrogate thing, like I just mentioned. And if Rollins is not healthy enough to do a run-in in that match, then he doesn't do a run-in. It's no big deal. But don't rush the guy back. So the Fastlane card, let's talk a little bit about this. The Fastlane card looks like Goldberg is going to be challenging Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship, and Roman Reigns will go one-on-one with Braun Strowman after Strowman cost Reigns the championship. He did the big run-in at the Rumble and cost him the belt. Hopefully they end up doing a DQ or something along those lines. Strowman has real momentum right now. He's actually getting over. And I would hate to see him get Rybacked in that match. See, I just made that word up. I said it on the prediction show I did a month ago. You can go back and listen to it. And you can hold me to this in August. I think the SummerSlam match, whether it's for the championship or not, I think the SummerSlam match is going to be Brock Lesnar against Braun Strowman. That's ultimately where I think that's going to end up. And, you know, look, I mean, I guess he could lose to Roman Reigns, and Roman's a big star. It's not a huge deal. But I would rather not see Braun Strowman go down at the hands of Roman Reigns. I'm sure a lot of people would rather not see that. So if they do that match, hopefully it's not just a straight up, you know, spear 1-2-3. So Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, this is interesting. Goldberg and Brock now is being rumored to be for the championship at WrestleMania, which would mean that Goldberg beats Kevin Owens at Fastlane to win the title. A lot of people up in arms about this. They think it's very unfair to Kevin Owens, and they say that Goldberg and Brock doesn't need to be for the belt. And you're right, it doesn't have to be. Absolutely right. It doesn't have to be for the championship. But if Lesnar and Goldberg is the main event, as I believe they are scheduled to be, if that is going to be the headline match of WrestleMania this year, would I make it for the championship? Yeah, you bet your ass I would. Absolutely. And here's why. Besides the fact that they're the two most believable guys on the roster and the fact that Goldberg is their top babyface, as sad as that sounds, he is their top babyface. If they are headlining WrestleMania this year, then it should be for the championship. You know, putting Kevin Owens against Chris Jericho, two heels, in the middle of the card, or third or fourth from the top, for the Universal title, just makes the title look like a giant red piece of crap. Some might say the title already looks like a giant red piece of crap. I wouldn't disagree. If Goldberg-Brock is the main event, they're two biggest stars, it should be for the championship. So I don't have any issue with it. I'm okay with that. Because that's how it always should be. So I have no issue with it. Another rumor going around concerns John Cena. And it's funny to hear about this because as we sit here right now, John Cena is the WWE champion. And yet the talk is that when WrestleMania rolls around in 8 weeks, he's going to be in a mixed tag. And it's going to be John Cena and Nikki Bella teaming up for the very first time against The Miz and Maryse. I never thought I would see a WrestleMania card all these years later, what, 6 years later now, with John Cena and The Miz against each other again after we got that horrible match back in 2011. But here we are, and this is the rumor. It's not confirmed or anything like that, but the belief is that John Cena is not going to be WWE champion for much longer. In fact, I guess there's another pay-per-view a week from tonight. He's probably going to be dropping it at that pay-per-view. And once the title is taken away from him, if they're not going to do Cena against Undertaker, and we've already seen Cena and AJ Styles a gazillion times, and now he's beaten AJ, there's no reason to beat a dead horse. What do you do with John Cena? Samoa Joe went to Raw, he didn't go to SmackDown, so you really, I mean, I guess you could do that match, they could find a way, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So you do a mixed tag match, because I guess to them it just, you know, doesn't matter. Everybody else is all booked up, so why not? I thought, if anything, it would end up being Dean Ambrose and Renee Young, right? Go back a month or so, I thought that was the mixed tag they were building to. And Renee is not a wrestler, so it's probably for the better. Maryse at least did wrestle, and actually I thought she turned into a pretty good wrestler there at the end before she retired. But, you know, Renee just doesn't have the experience as a wrestler. I mean, we've seen, for example, Brandi Rhodes, and I haven't seen enough of her to judge, but I saw what I think was her very first match in TNA, and it wasn't very good. So, You can't just take somebody who's never done this before and expect them to go in there and just because they've been around it, they're going to be great at it. The belief is that this may lead to a marriage proposal at the end of the match where Cena drops to a knee and proposes marriage, which he said he would never do, to Nikki Bella. And maybe there is something to this, because we saw Natalya on TV just a few weeks ago, you know, bringing it into the storyline, talking about John, the reason John will never marry you, and she's really putting Nikki down, and, you know, maybe it is leading to something. This is, I guess, their way maybe of trying to do a Macho Man Elizabeth moment. I still remember when the Macho Man got down on one knee and he proposed to Elizabeth. And she said, oh yeah, and it was this big moment. And this could be, I guess, the modern day version of that. I can only imagine how the crowd would react if this plays out in the middle of the ring. Look, it could be a cool thing. And I don't mind it if they want to face John Cena down, put him in a match lower on the card. I don't really understand. There are some people who are actually upset about it. What a waste of John Cena. You know what? It is a waste of John Cena, but why are you upset? Like, these same people who would probably just bitch and moan about the fact that John Cena is in the main event every year. He's always in a big match. You know what? I think it's kind of refreshing, if anything, you know, if they're not going to do, the Undertaker match, to do something else with Cena and let somebody else have a chance to shine in some of the other, you know, big matches. And look, there is an audience for Total Divas. I'm not part of that audience, but there's a lot of people who follow these women on Instagram and they watch Total Divas and they know all the storylines and the relationships and all that. There is a big segment of the WWE audience who would, I think, eat that shit up and would be into it. So I guess we'll see. But it's kind of weird to me that we're talking about John Cena being in a mixed tag and proposing marriage for WrestleMania when right now he is the champion. So I have a feeling that title run number 16 won't be lasting very long, which only means one thing, that not only will he, as he just tied Flair's record, that inevitably he will break Ric Flair's record. I wouldn't be shocked if John Cena, before all is said and done, ends up being a 20-time champion. Get him to number 20. Funny thing about that is even if they get him to number 20, he still hasn't got more titles than Ric Flair. I think the number that people generally settle on for Flair, the legit number, is either 21 or 23. I think even Flair has said the number's like 21 or 23. So I don't think John Cena will ever beat the real record, but I do think he will ultimately break the existing record that WWE likes to use. Dean Ambrose, I just mentioned him, right? They're not going to do Dean and Renee against Miz and Maryse, it looks like. So Dean is the Intercontinental Champion. He looks like a man without a plan for WrestleMania. He's kind of the odd man out here, which just to me means probably going to end up in another multi-man match for the Intercontinental title. Honestly, there's no obvious opponent for him. To me, I look at that SmackDown roster and I say to myself, Baron Corbin is the only name that keeps jumping out at me here. Corbin really is the closest thing, and we saw Corbin get involved in that main event on SmackDown this week with Ambrose, and I'll talk about that later. Ambrose and Corbin for the title, only thing that makes sense to me, with Corbin going over, winning the Intercontinental Championship, although based on how they do things, Ambrose would get the fluke win, so they could save the title change for the next SmackDown pay-per-view after WrestleMania. That is how they often will do things. But I really don't see any other obvious match for Dean Ambrose. Ambrose is sort of, not even sort of. I mean, Ambrose is the Iron Man of that company. He's the guy who wrestled more matches in 2016 than anyone else on the roster. He's always reliable and dependable. He's the one member of the Shield who I don't remember ever hearing about getting hurt. Remember, Roman was out for a few months with that hernia. Seth's had the knee injuries. And Dean seems to be the most durable member of the entire group. And unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily mean jack shit when it comes to your place on the card. All it means is that they can just beat you into the ground because they know you're like an old dog, right? You're reliable. Hey, we need something. Let's go to Dean Ambrose. Let's stick him in there. So if they need him for a multi-man match, I guess that's where he'll end up. But hopefully it'll be against Corbin, because that, to me, is the only match that really makes sense. Rude Boy Riley. That may or may not be a name that you recognize. I've seen him on several independent shows. He's a very talented guy. He now has a documentary about his career. It is called Dust and Bones, The Chronicles of James Rude Boy Riley, which showcases the passion and the determination of a native New Yorker who chases down his lifelong goal of becoming a WWE superstar. got late nights traveling, early mornings working, and personal sacrifices made along the way. Dust and Bones aims to pull back the curtain on independent wrestling to reveal its opportunities, its struggles, and its brotherhood. You can watch the rise of not only a superstar, but a brother, a nephew, and a son trying to make his family proud. The documentary features Cody Rhodes, Tommaso Ciampa, Ken Anderson, Billy Gunn, Al Snow, Sami Callihan, Jinder Mahal, and many more. You can check out the trailer for the documentary on Facebook, facebook.com/dustandbonesdoc. Interestingly enough, Riley is one of the names who was down at the Performance Center this week getting a WWE tryout. So fingers crossed for him. This could turn out to be his big break. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Laredo, Texas. Raw Twitter poll, over 2,700 votes. 72% thumbs up, 28% thumbs down. Man, talk about skewed. You take away that Samoa Joe debut there at the end, and this poll looks very different than it does here. Triple H made his first appearance on Raw since turning on Seth Rollins and handing Kevin Owens the Universal title. He cut a babyface promo. Talked about how, I'm trying very hard. I'm trying hard not to be the evil man I used to be. I'm trying to build something with NXT. And he blamed Seth Rollins for being too weak and getting hurt all the time and how he let him down. And boy, does that hit close to home after what happened a few minutes later. This promo, coupled with Rollins earlier in the show threatening Triple H's kids. I'm watching this, I'm like, who's the bad guy and who's the good guy here? Shockingly, Stephanie did not slap Seth after he made that comment about coming to their doorstep and seeing their kids when they opened the door. I thought that was going to be worthy of slapping his head right off his shoulders, but she didn't do it. And in fact, when she said, my husband's going to be here later, the place cheered. So again, I ask you, who's the bad guy and who's the good guy here? Triple H challenged Rollins, though, at the end of the show to come out and fight him. Again, quite the babyface move. And when Rollins did, he was attacked by Samoa Joe, who beat him up all over ringside, took him down in the ring with the sleeper, put him out. I talked about what happened already with the injury. Despite that, despite what happened with the leg, I thought this was a great debut for Joe. He made a statement in his very first appearance. It puts him right in the mix, right in the main event picture. I thought it was very well done. And you know, there was a time where we didn't even know if they would let Joe... we didn't know if Joe would even make the main roster. And if he did, we didn't think they would let him use his name. I used to joke, like, oh man, I can't wait for Joey Samoa to make his debut, or Bazooka Joe to appear on the main roster. And here he is, finally, as Samoa Joe. We'll see what happens with Rollins. Again, the match at Fastlane, obviously, is not happening. But they, you know, do they find someone to take his place, or do they drag this thing out with the hope that Rollins will make it back in time for WrestleMania? We'll see. I mean, they're going to have an update tomorrow night. We'll find out more. But if that 8-week window is accurate, I think you call the match off and you go with Plan B. That's what I would do. Sami Zayn is on a bit of a roll lately after being made out to look like a freaking goober the last few weeks. Supposedly he was in the doghouse, for what I don't know. But he beat Seth Rollins on Raw last week, and then in the Rumble, he put in, I think, the second best Iron Man performance of the match. Chris Jericho went just over an hour, but Sami went about 47 or 48 minutes in that Rumble match. And this week, he beat the United States champion Chris Jericho in a non-title match. So I assume that is going to lead to a U.S. title match at the next Raw pay-per-view. Braun Strowman challenged Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship. He pointed out to Owens that many weeks ago, Owens had made a promise to him, and he had footage to back it up, that Owens had promised him a championship match. And Owens tried to talk his way out of it, and it just didn't work. So they had a title match, and I liked the way they did this whole thing up until the end, which was so I could see it coming. But, you know, Strowman comes out, Jericho's on stage doing commentary, and Strowman immediately turns to the announce table and runs over and just, with all of his might, boots Jericho so hard in the chest, he knocks him backwards out of his seat. So now he's taken Chris Jericho out of the equation. He goes in there, him and Owens have a short match, maybe about 4 or 5 minutes, and you could see where this was going, because Roman Reigns had been screwed over by Strowman just the night before, out of the championship, and so it only made sense for Roman to screw him out of the championship, which is exactly what he did. He came out, he interfered, disqualification, people booed, they were pissed, that Roman Reigns had come in and ruined this championship match. You know, again, I see everything they're doing with Roman, and the only thing that makes sense is the guy's going heel. Because if he's not, they are doing every single thing wrong to get the people to like this guy and to embrace this guy. They're doing just the opposite, putting him out there at number 30 in the Rumble. What reaction did you think he would get? Having him come out and interfere in this match, what reaction did you think he would get? The only possible explanation is that this guy is going heel. But this is Vince McMahon we're talking about here, so you never know. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman made an appearance and issued a formal challenge to Bill Goldberg for a match at WrestleMania. It's been a while since we've gotten a really memorable Paul Heyman promo. I have not been overly impressed by some of his recent appearances, but this was great. He was back in top form here on this show. He said, every superstar reaches a point where they run into that one person they just can't beat. They beat everybody else, but then people come up to them and they say, yeah, but. Right? Andre the Giant, he said, went undefeated for 15 years, and people said, yeah, but he lost to Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3. Yeah, but that's a lie, but we'll let it slide. He mentioned Ronda Rousey destroying everybody in her path and people saying, yeah, but she lost to Holly Holm. And The Undertaker went undefeated at WrestleMania and people said, yeah, but then he got beat by Brock Lesnar. Now people say, yeah, but about Brock Lesnar for losing to Goldberg in a minute and 26 seconds. Yeah, but, he says, is the absolute worst thing you could say to somebody who lives off of their accomplishments. And that's when Heyman issued the challenge, and both he and Brock pointed at the stupid WrestleMania sign. Oh, God. They got Lesnar to point at the frickin' thing. Brock should be eating the sign, not pointing at it. So they've set that match in motion. Sasha Banks, acting a little heelish towards Bayley backstage when she was taping up her knee for her rematch. She was squashed by Nia Jax the night before, so she was gonna go for it again. And if it's up to me, you know, we've been hearing about a lot of WrestleMania plans for Triple H and Shane McMahon and AJ Styles and The Undertaker and Roman Reigns. But we haven't heard a lot about the women and what they have planned for them. And if it's up to me, you do a triple threat match at WrestleMania with Charlotte, Sasha, and Bayley. But then, you know, the way that Nia Jax has made Sasha her bitch of late, she kind of has to be in there too. I mean, Sasha's been losing so much. What I would do is, whether it's a triple threat or a fatal four-way, I would have Sasha get the win at WrestleMania this year that she did not get last year. People thought it was this foregone conclusion that Sasha Banks was going to win the championship at WrestleMania, and she didn't. And I think now you pull the trigger, you have Sasha win the belt back, and they could even, you know, what they could do is they could even keep Charlotte's streak alive. If they want to keep that pay-per-view streak alive, just have Sasha, you know, tap out Nia in the bank statement. She doesn't have to pin Charlotte or make Charlotte tap out. Charlotte doesn't even have to take the losing fall. So that's their escape if they want to keep that streak intact. And I think having Sasha tap out Nia, if Nia just keeps squashing her, it would be nice redemption for Sasha to finally get that big submission win over Nia Jax. And so Sasha wins the belt back, but then between WrestleMania and SummerSlam, she goes heel. Seems like they're going in that direction anyway. Heel Sasha Banks is the best Sasha Banks. Keep going in that direction. She goes heel somewhere in that period, and you build to Sasha defending the championship against Bayley in Brooklyn at SummerSlam, just like she did 2 years ago at the NXT show. I don't think Bayley should win the belt for a while, and I think if they save it for a win over Sasha again in Brooklyn, I think that would be the better option. I think that would be the better story to tell. As far as this match, the match that Sasha had with Nia here on Raw, it sucked. It was only 2 minutes, but it was 2 minutes of suck. And the finish was botched. Timekeeper ran the bell too soon. Nia had Sasha in like a knee bar. She was bending her in half, and the referee looked completely confused, didn't know what to do since he obviously never called for the bell. I'll be honest, I thought it was Bayley off camera coming out and ringing the bell, almost like her way of throwing in the towel for her friend. But it wasn't. They just fucked up. Maybe it was so bad the timekeeper just couldn't take it and he decided to ring the bell by himself. I don't know. One last note on this show. As of today, it has been 125 days since WWE aired the very first return vignette for Emelina. And in case you haven't noticed, she still has yet to return. I will update that number every single week so we can keep track of exactly how many days have gone by since that first vignette, just to show how ridiculous they are being with this. She's been cleared to return since the second week of August. Think about that. It's ridiculous. SmackDown Live. Almost 2,000 votes in our SmackDown poll. 79% thumbs up, 21% thumbs down.
Champs are chumps!
Yes, indeed. Champs were chumps here on this episode of SmackDown. Actually, champs were chumps on Raw, too. Jericho got pinned by Sami Zayn, and Charlotte got pinned by Bayley. So this whole week, one long episode of champs are chumps. John Cena, the WWE champion, got pinned by Randy Orton in a tag team match where Luke Harper teamed with Cena against Orton and Bray Wyatt. We had Naomi and Becky Lynch beating Mickie James and Alexa Bliss, the women's champion, after Naomi pinned Alexa with a split-legged moonsault. And AJ Styles pinned Dean Ambrose, the Intercontinental Champion, in the main event. Now, at least in the first two cases, it does lead to rematches for the championship. Naomi pinning Bliss sets that up as a title match, I assume, at the Elimination Chamber next Sunday. And obviously, Orton is supposed to wrestle Cena for the title at WrestleMania, even though he won't. So at least if your champs are going to be chumps, at least it leads to something. The issue I always had with that is that more often than not, it wouldn't lead to anything. You'd have champions losing left and right on TV, and it wouldn't go anywhere. They just beat their champs like a drum because they could. That's what used to piss me off about that. They had a tag team title open challenge with American Alpha. You know, American Alpha is another one. I don't know why Gable and Jordan weren't in the Royal Rumble. That Rumble, man, you know, I look at some of those spots that they doled out, some of the people, some of the lower card guys that were in the Rumble, and I think, you know, why not Jordan and Gable? You know, why were they backstage twiddling their thumbs? Like, the choice of some people that were in that match just makes me scratch my head. But I watched this open challenge they did here, and man, this tag team division sucks. This tag team division really sucks right now. The tag team division on Raw is not much better. That one sucks too. Jordan and Gable have just no real competition. They have no momentum at the moment. It's nice that they're the champs, but if they've got nobody to really work with, then what does it really mean? They're just kind of floating around, and now would be a great time to bring the Revival up to this show. I know this is not the most ideal time of year that you want to be debuting new people on the main roster. Generally, you want to avoid that. Now, thank God they did it with Samoa Joe. I think with him, the timing was fine. But generally, you don't do that because guys get lost in all the WrestleMania hype. Usually, you have your WrestleMania card set in stone. And so you're building to these big matches. And the last thing you want to do is debut some new guy from NXT who nobody's going to give a shit about. So you usually wait until after WrestleMania to bring in the new faces. But boy, you know, that WrestleMania card could really use an American Alpha Revival tag team title match. I would bring them up. I mean, I could see why if they want to wait a little longer. But if it were me, I kind of push the panic button here and bring them up. Because this tag team division, they've got a lot of teams. They've got American Alpha. They've got the Usos. They've got Slater and Rhino. They've got the Vaudevillains. They've got the Fashion Police. They've got, I think, one more that I'm missing. It's not that they don't have teams, but these teams, who cares? Who cares about any of these teams? Same thing on Raw. You know, I mean, Gallows and Anderson are the tag team champions now. It's going to take a long time for me to get back into these guys and actually give a shit about them because they were just beaten and made to be, you know, nothing for so long. Just putting belts on them doesn't all of a sudden make me give a shit. And other than them and the New Day, you got Cesaro and Sheamus, and at that point, the well kind of runs dry as far as Raw goes. SmackDown seems to have more teams, but these tag team divisions right now are just dull as dishwater. Get Dash and Dawson on this show ASAP. I really enjoyed the main event with AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. Long match, good match. Styles wins with the forearm. This after Miz and Baron Corbin got involved. They were out there on commentary for the match. In fact, they had seven. Yes, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, but seven people out there at the announce booth for this match. Mauro Ranallo, Trip Bradshaw, David Otunga, Tom Phillips, who said nothing because he has no business being out there, Miz, Maryse, who never actually said anything, but she doesn't have to, and Baron Corbin. Seven bodies out there at ringside. It looked like the fucking NWO when they started to add guys like Vincent and Bryan Adams. It looked like a lumberjack match out there. So, the Elimination Chamber match next Sunday for the WWE Championship looks like this. We've got John Cena, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, The Miz, Bray Wyatt, and Baron Corbin. That is your lineup. Based on the proposed card that we've seen for WrestleMania, it looks like they can set things up with pretty much everybody in this match except AJ Styles. Bray Wyatt, I'll do my predictions next week, but, you know, Bray Wyatt, I figure, is getting the championship. All roads lead to Wyatt and Orton at WrestleMania. Miz can do something in the match to help cost Cena the belt. That could lead to the mixed tag match that's been rumored for WrestleMania. And they could set something up between Ambrose and Corbin because, again, it's the only opponent right now that really makes sense for Ambrose. And that leads to an IC title match, hopefully not just some multi-man match. And then AJ Styles is kind of the odd man out. I think things are kind of up in the air right now as far as what Shane is going to do, and that could impact what AJ does. So we'll see. I think we'll get a better sense of things after this week and we find out exactly what the deal is with the Rollins injury and if he's in or if he's out. So we'll know more at that point. Cool is that? That's John Kiernan's cover of The Rising Sun, Shinsuke Nakamura's theme song. John does covers for other wrestling themes as well. If you want to hear the full track, and you should because it's awesome, just go to youtube.com/John Kiernan Music. That's K-I-E-R-N-A-N music. His stuff is also on iTunes and on Spotify. So if you just search for John Kiernan, it should come up. I punched it up on Spotify and it came right up for me. So my thanks to him for letting me play that little snippet there to lead into this week's NXT report. NXT this week was taped from the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio where they did the TakeOver special last week. If you want my review for the TakeOver show, it is up on YouTube. I'm not going to get into that show here. You can hear all my thoughts. They're up on the YouTube channel as a sound off extra. I did think it was the weakest of all the TakeOver shows to date, but it was still a strong show, which I think speaks very highly for the quality of these TakeOver shows. We got a big Corey Graves video, about a 5-minute long Corey Graves tribute video. He's not dead, but this was his final appearance on NXT in the announce booth. He is moving on. This was inevitable. I mean, the guy's on Raw. He's doing pay-per-views. He's doing 205 Live. He can't do everything. And so they have found his replacement. He will be replaced by Nigel McGuinness, who I think did an excellent job with Michael Cole on the UK tournament. So I'm sure he'll settle in there just fine. It'll be sad to see Corey Graves gone. He's been one of the few shining beacons of commentary in that company. I really enjoy his work, and I enjoy him putting down Tom Phillips and even putting down Percy Watson, who deserves to be put down. And it's a shame that he won't be there anymore, but I think Nigel is more than capable of filling his shoes. Ember Moon beat Aaliyah. No heat for this, but it looks like they're setting up Ember as Asuka's next opponent. They interviewed Asuka backstage after TakeOver, and she said, "She still works here?" And Kathy Kelly said, "Yes, Ember Moon does in fact work here." I think it's time. I think that it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen in Orlando. I think Ember Moon is taking the title. I mean, who else is there? Think about it. Who else? There's no one left. Asuka has ran through all of them. There's no one left. So I think you want to make a real new star on this brand. You gotta at some point. Look, she's got the great finish. That twisting stunner off the top, that's a great finish. And I could see the big ending of the match where she hits the stunner and maybe she gets a near fall and has to hit another one. I don't know, but I think the time has come and I think Ember Moon is going to be the one. Tyler Bate was there, the new WWE UK champion. I enjoyed the match he had with Oney Lorcan. Nice and snug. Tyler Driver 97 for the win. 97 as in 1997, which is the year that he was born. Dude's only 19, and already his mustache game is on point. You know who else was born in 1997, now that I mentioned that? It's going to sound totally creepy that I even know this. The girl who played Nancy on Stranger Things. She was the sister. Yeah, she was born in 97 too. I just went on a Stranger Things binge the other night. Fucking love that show. It's for me, it's like for someone like me, it's perfect. Like, it's based in the 80s. I love the 80s. I'm all about the 80s. They've got little Easter eggs throughout the whole series from like different 80s movies. There's at least like four different references to E.T. Like, they have just stolen so many things from E.T. on that show. It's comical. And the music, it's got that John Carpenter synthesizer vibe going for it. I just like, how did it take me this long to discover this show? I know season two's coming out in a few months. I'm all hyped now for that. Anyway. They showed video of Shinsuke Nakamura backstage at TakeOver after he lost the championship, being tended to by the doctor. And Cassius Ohno was standing there, just in a suit and tie. He was standing there with Matt Bloom. Just there he was. That was his big return. And he knelt down beside Nakamura. He told him how much the situation sucked. You know, he sympathized with him. And that was it. That was quite the return for Chris Hero here to NXT television. Main event was No Way Jose beating The Drifter. And when your main event is No Way Jose against The Drifter, you know it's a pretty lame show. This week, they are going to be back at Full Sail again. Nigel McGuinness will join Tom Phillips and Percy Pringle on Percy Watson. Percy Pringle. I'd rather hear fucking Percy Pringle on commentary than Percy Watson. Let's raise him from the dead and prop him up in the announce chair, like Weekend of Bernie style. Let's talk about some other assorted news items here. Kevin Kelly is no longer working full-time for Ring of Honor. He is no longer an employee. He had been pretty heavily involved with the company behind the scenes, in addition to being the face of ROH as their play-by-play man. Kelly and Steve Corino, you know, when I would have time to watch ROH TV, I really enjoyed them as an announce team. They were probably my favorite of all the announce teams right now. And now Corino is with WWE as a trainer, as is Nigel McGuinness. Now, Nigel McGuinness, for years, was the on-screen matchmaker, kind of the de facto general manager for Ring of Honor, and he would fill in on commentary with Kevin Kelly when Corino wasn't around. He's gone to WWE too. And it doesn't look like Kelly is going back to WWE. They don't really have a place for him now anyway. But he is still doing the English language commentary for New Japan. And he, in fact, that might have had more to do than anything else with why he stepped away from Ring of Honor full time, is that just with the commitments and everything, he couldn't juggle both. And I guess New Japan was paying better or made him a better offer. And so he decided to go with them. I don't know that there were any other issues or politics involved here. I can't say for sure. But he will still be doing the New Japan stuff. And he may still be on camera for Ring of Honor in the future. Apparently at the most recent tapings, though, they had someone else doing play-by-play alongside Silas Young. I guess Silas Young was the color man. It really is something when you look at how many people, you know, we kind of joke and talk about TNA a lot, but, you know, Ring of Honor, you really look at how many people have left Ring of Honor over the last year or so. I mean, I guess we could leave out Kevin Kelly if he's still possibly going to do TV for them on occasion, but, you know, Steve Corino, Nigel McGuinness, Michael Elgin, who went to New Japan, Cedric Alexander, Roderick Strong, ACH, it looks like Kyle O'Reilly may be gone. Adam Cole, I would be surprised if he doesn't end up in WWE in a few months. I mean, it's like, what is going on with Ring of Honor? I mean, it's not all bad. I mean, they re-signed the Young Bucks. I saw Kenny Omega is coming back soon for, you know, to work some dates for them. And they just re-signed Jay Lethal, I think, to a 2-year deal. But it just feels like guys have been dropping like flies lately. It's like, what is Sinclair paying these guys? Jeez. We finally have a return date for the second half of Season 3 of Lucha Underground. That date is Wednesday, May 31st, so get ready. Court Bauer on MLW Radio confirmed this week that Lucha Underground is coming to Netflix on February 15th, which is not that far off, but there are some caveats. It is only the first 2 seasons. The entire show is not moving from El Rey Network to Netflix. It will still be on El Rey. And it is only, apparently, it's only on Netflix in North America for now. So I guess if you're in the UK or if you're in Australia or anywhere else in the world that isn't North America, well, I guess you're up Schitt's Creek. I don't know what to tell you. I was asked by somebody who never watched Lucha Underground before, who's excited that Lucha Underground is coming to Netflix and they want to give it a shot. I was asked to name a few matches from those first 2 seasons for them to check out. First of all, I would advise you to watch all of the episodes. Like, start from the very first one and watch it straight through. That's what I would do. But if you want to cherry pick the really good stuff, definitely check out the Grave Consequences match between Mil Muertes and Phoenix, which is still my favorite Lucha Underground match. It's basically their version of a casket match, and it's better than any casket match I've ever seen in WWE. Check out the all-night-long match between Johnny Mundo and Prince Puma, which is their version of an Iron Man match. You can check out that first Aztec Warfare match, which is kind of like their version of the Royal Rumble, but better. You notice a pattern here? They do WWE stips better than WWE does. But I would watch those first, and also the No Mas match. There was a No Mas match between Sexy Star and Mariposa. I believe that was season 2. So watch that one too. It was quite good. So those are the matches I would start with. I watched the XFL 30 for 30 special on ESPN. Just some quick thoughts. I enjoyed it. It was a nice little trip down memory lane, even if some of those memories are memories I wish I could forget. They talked to all the key players involved, but it was pretty much exactly what I thought it would be. It was framed as this groundbreaking thing that never stood a chance because everybody wanted it to fail. It's all the media's fault. The media wanted them to fail. It really, I gotta say, it was amazing to me watching this thing and hearing Vince talk the way he was talking and some of the things he was saying. The similarities between Vince and Trump. Like, I can totally see why the two of them gravitated towards each other and became friends. At one point in the documentary, Vince literally said he wished death on the media and then walked away. So of course he blamed everybody and everything but himself for this thing failing. To me, Dick Ebersol came across here like a really nice guy. He came across here really well. At least Dick Ebersol and the NBC guys that they interviewed seemed more grounded in reality. They were never going to be real competition to the NFL. And what they wanted to do, they wanted to give people something when the NFL season ended and when the Super Bowl ended, beginning of February. Now there's no football. So along came the XFL. We're going to fill the gap. We're going to be better than the NFL. We're going to give you a smash mouth version of football. Not like those panty waists in the NFL. I mean, this is how they promoted it. So they wanted to put something in there that would help fill the gap. The problem is, it was an inferior product. Right? They tried. Now, the one thing that does come across when you watch this is how ambitious Vince McMahon is. Sometimes to his own detriment, right? For example, the jury is still out on the WWE Network, but he looked at the network as an investment in the future, something they had to do for the long-term health of the company. So he took a gamble and they spent well over $100 million to get this network set up, cannibalized their pay-per-view business because he saw this as being the future. So Vince has always been this ambitious personality, and the network is just the latest example of that. And that does come across here, and there's nothing wrong with being ambitious. That does come across here in this documentary. So again, with the XFL, what do? You try to put out a product that people want to see and you hope for the best. And after that first week where they popped that huge curiosity number, the people fled in droves. It was a steep drop because the XFL just wasn't something they wanted to see. They weren't impressed. The lowest ratings of any kind ever on network television on a Saturday night. That's not the media's fault. That's not Bob Costas' fault, even though he did come off in this thing like a bit of a douchebag. I don't think it's his fault. I think he was just born that way. He was actually the only guy in this entire thing who came off smart enough to realize what a bad idea this was. They showed clips also from that HBO interview where Costas interviewed Vince. Vince had his infamous meltdown, which was not his only meltdown in a sit-down interview on HBO. Let us not forget the interview with Armin Kattan, where they were talking about wrestler deaths and Vince literally laughed and then knocked the papers out of the guy's hand. Yeah, very mature. It's funny, you know, I can remember, let's see, I was still in college when the XFL was around, and I remember watching the stuff with Jesse Ventura, and Rusty Tillman. And I would not know Rusty Tillman from a fucking hole in the wall were it not for this. This still, after all these years, sticks out in my mind. Otherwise, I wouldn't even know who Rusty Tillman is. And I was hoping they would show it here, and they did. They had the footage of it. It got to the point where they were so desperate to save this thing and to generate ratings that they told Jesse Ventura to basically work a storyline with Rusty Tillman. Rusty Tillman coached one of the teams. He used to play in the NFL. And Jesse was on this guy's ass. He called him Gutless Rusty, I think, for kicking a field goal in one game instead of going for the touchdown. And they sent Jesse onto the field at the end of the game to talk smack to Tillman and put a mic in his face, like Jesse was some guy from TMZ. It was so obvious what they were trying to do, and Tillman just didn't want to have any of it. He did not want to have any part of it. He didn't take the bait. I remember him afterwards talking about how when he signed on for this, he told them, "I'm not interested in doing any of that WWE crap." And that's exactly what it was. It was Vince McMahon trying to infuse pro wrestling into football. And it just came off so phony and forced. And guess what? People didn't watch football to see pro wrestling. They watched football to see fucking football. That's why you were doing a 1.0 rating. The most embarrassing thing was the stuff with the cheerleaders, which they documented that here also. They promoted the fact that for the first time in sports, we're going to send cameras into the women's locker room. And they interviewed the cheerleaders like a promo. They interviewed these women to find out, what do you think about this innovative concept? Look, I was in college at the time, okay? I was hornier than a fucking flock of unicorns. And even I was embarrassed to watch this shit. Like, head in my hands, if someone were to walk in on me right now, I would change the channel. Level embarrassment. Especially that skit. Oh my God. The skit where Vince McMahon, this was something right out of Raw. He's in the back, he's pacing the halls, waiting for the cameraman to show up, and finally he does, and Vince is yelling at him, "Where have you been? This is our big moment." And it's the one where he goes to send the guy into the women's locker room with the camera. The guy runs right into the door, knocks himself out. Now he's unconscious. They go into this dream sequence. It's like Vince was doing WWE comedy skits during what was supposed to be a real sporting event. There are WWE fans who don't find WWE comedy skits to be funny. Can you imagine football fans? So, of course, NBC was smart enough to look at this and realize, hey, do we really want to commit to another year of this shit and lose our ass? The answer was no. Vince wanted to. He was ready to move ahead. Even after NBC pulled out, they still had TV with some other, lower network. It might have been the network SmackDown was on. Vince was going to see this thing through until the end. He was committed to this. He said, "You need time to establish this. It's gonna work. It's gonna be successful." And Vince ultimately saw the writing on the wall, and without strong television, which is what NBC gave them, they were dead in the water, just like WCW. When you don't have TV, you're dead in the water. And so ended the XFL, just like the WBF. That didn't work out for Vince much better. But they did talk about some of the stuff, like the overhead camera shot, the sky cam, I think they called it, that the NFL really did steal from the XFL. My favorite part of the whole thing was the last few minutes, with Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersol having dinner together. It was like a table for three episode on the network, table for two. Like I said, Dick Ebersol comes across like a really nice guy. I had no idea that he apparently worked for Vince in between his stints at NBC, or at least that's how they made it sound on this documentary. And I think the director of this documentary was Dick Ebersol's kid. So I assume he obviously had his facts straight, but it sounded like he worked for Vince like around WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 4, and then in 89, Ebersol took over as the head of sports at NBC. So, again, unless I misread that completely, that's something I did not know before this. But my favorite part was at the very end. My favorite part, they do a deal where they show Vince, and they put some text up on the screen, like at the end of a movie, when they want to tell you what happened to the characters. You get this picture of Vince who looks really old. Like, I mean, he is old. This guy's fucking old, so he looks old. But man, he's aged. So they show Vince on the screen, and they put this text up. And the text It's probably written by Vince. It says how in 2001, he bought his last remaining rival in WCW, and this is a direct quote now, completing his decades-long mission to unite the world of wrestling. You see? That's all he ever wanted to do. He just wanted to unite everyone. He's a uniter, not a divider. That was awesome. He did the same thing with the territories in the 80s. He just wanted to unite them. So the scary part is that Dick Ebersol asks him, he goes, you know, do you still ever have the itch to try it again? And without hesitation, Vince says yes. Only this time he says, I would do it differently, probably like do something in partnership with the NFL instead of against the NFL. The guy lost $69 million on the XFL. I don't think they mentioned that in the documentary. $69 million. Or WWF did anyway. Maybe not Vince directly. He would be wise to just stick to what he knows best. He's the wrestling guy, not the football guy. It's when Vince tries to become something other than the wrestling guy that he usually gets into trouble, right? All these outside ventures that he's ever tried to embark on and try, they always fail. So you always come back to the wrestling. Even the people that think WWE sucks right now, and the fact is WWE is super successful, and they make millions upon millions of dollars, and so that's what he's good at. Stick to what you know. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. I apologize. It's going to be a more abbreviated version of the mailbag this week. I've had no time this week to do all the things I want to do. And at the same time, I got a crush of questions in the last few days. So my inbox is just packed and I haven't been able to pull as many out of there as I wanted to. So I'm not going to get to as many this week as I usually do, but hopefully next week we'll be kind of semi back to normal. Oliver Norgrove wrote a blog. He wanted my thoughts on it. Regarding how to legitimize WWE's women's revolution. He pitches them doing a women's Royal Rumble, even if only with half the number of women as they have men in the Rumble. He also thinks that they should do a women's Elimination Chamber match and a women's Money in the Bank ladder match. I am not a fan of the Rumble idea, and I've said this before, only because I think having two Rumbles on one show is probably overkill. But he's not wrong. In fact, he's probably right and I'm probably wrong in that there's no reason for them not to do a women's version of the Rumble. You know, if they want to treat the women as equals, then they should have something similar. Like, you know, it's Survivor Series. When they do a Survivor Series elimination match with the men, they usually have at least one women's elimination match at Survivor Series. So it does make sense. So maybe the solution there is you open the show with the smaller women's Rumble match, and then you close the show with the bigger men's Rumble. So you kind of bookend the show with two Rumbles. That might be the way to go. Doing a women's chamber match, I think, is fine. Doing a Money in the Bank match is fine. My reservation about the Money in the Bank match has more to do with safety. The fact is, not every woman on that roster is a giant like Charlotte. Charlotte's a tall girl. There's a lot of tiny women on that roster. They would have to lower, I would think they would have to lower the briefcase closer down to the ring if they were going to do it. I mean, can you imagine Alexa Bliss, even from the very top of a normal size ladder, trying to reach up and grab anything, try to reach up and grab a belt or a briefcase? Like, she'd get to the top of the ladder and she'd still need stilts to reach the freaking thing. You've got to take their size into consideration when it comes to stuff like that. And generally, the women are not as big as the men. So again, the simple solution might just be, well, lower it closer to the ring. But I just think back to Charlotte and Sasha in that Hell in a Cell match, and I think back to Charlotte throwing Sasha onto that table. And instead of it breaking, watching Sasha roll right off the table. She weighs so little that thing didn't even break. So some adjustments have to be made. That, and here's the other reason. You could do it, but you gotta do some things first. I would feel a lot more comfortable watching a match like that with them if they had some of the women in singles ladder matches before the Money in the Bank match. Now, I'm not saying that every week in the build to Money in the Bank, you give away a bunch of ladder matches. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if they decide in their mind, you know what, we should do a women's Money in the Bank match, in the months beforehand, you should find a way to book one or two ladder matches, whether it's on TV or another pay-per-view for the championship, with some of the women who have not had experience working ladder matches before. So that at least would get them accustomed and comfortable with working in that type of environment and using the ladder as a weapon and not freaking killing each other. Because I don't know that any of these women, maybe some of them like Becky or someone on the independents, work ladder matches, but I don't think we've ever seen a women's ladder match of any kind in WWE. We've now seen a women's we've seen women's cage matches before. We've seen a women's Hell in a Cell. But when it comes to some of these other steps, we've never seen them before. So I assume that they don't have these, maybe they do at the performance center. They put a ladder in the ring and they have them practice and climb it. They should. If they're not already doing that, they should start doing that. But some of these women have never worked a ladder match before. So you can't just take 5, 6, 7 women who don't have experience working a match like that. And in some cases who don't even have a lot of experience, period, and just throw them in a Money in the Bank match and expect that, well, everything will be fine. Like, no, that has disaster written all over it. So I think before you kind of jump into the, you know, the deep end of the pool, let's see a women's ladder match, one-on-one. But I'm not against the idea at all. I remember a great ladder match I saw once in TNA between Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell, because Gail Kim is a great worker, and Taryn Terrell had improved a lot from where she had been. I'm sure working with Gail Kim had a lot to do with that. But they went out there and they killed it on Impact. They had a great ladder match. So I look at WWE and I say, man, you could do, you know, Sasha and whoever, you could do Mickie James and Becky Lynch could have a ladder match. Now, I guess if there's no championship and there's no briefcase, why have a ladder match? So I guess it would make sense for the champion to be involved. You could do Charlotte and someone. I was going to say Charlotte and Sasha, but I think we still need some more time before we go back to doing those one-on-one matches. But you see my point. Let's get something like that first before we take them all and put them in a match together. I mean, can you imagine Eva Marie in a Money in the Bank? Let's just stick Eva Marie in a Money in the Bank match. Like, if she didn't kill herself, she'd kill someone else. Some people just don't belong in matches like that. So it also depends on who you're going to put in there. Is it a combination of Raw and SmackDown women? I mean, you got to think about these things. But I'm not against the concept at all. Brian from Boston. Did you notice when Lesnar hit the ring at the Royal Rumble, he went right for Dean Ambrose and hit him what appeared to be very hard? Do you think that Brock did that because of Dean's comments on the Stone Cold podcast? I hadn't thought about that. I guess only Brock would know. I have no idea. You'd have to ask him. But, I don't ever see Brock Lesnar going in the ring and going soft on people. Like, that's the only speed he knows. Like, he went in there, he didn't just punch Dean. He was suplexing people. He gave people F5s. He goes in there, he beats the shit out of everybody. I don't really think it had to do like, oh, I gotta go after this guy first. I just think that's all he knows. He goes in there and he hits hard, and you better not be in the way when he does it. Noah from Paintsville, Kentucky. From his debut, I always liked the drifter, Elias Samson. But lately, I feel like he's showing more personality, like this past NXT, waving goodbye to Corey Graves on his way out. I fear he's going to go down like CJ Parker, and once he really starts to gain traction, he'll get the axe. Do you think it's genuine go-away heat that he has, or do people just love to hate him? I think people just love to hate him. I think, and CJ Parker, I don't know if this is what you were saying, but CJ Parker never got the axe. Let's just clear that up. He chose to leave NXT. He probably saw there was no real future for him with that gimmick, and he wanted to get better and improve, and he went to Japan, and good for him. He's done well for himself. He's actually doing pretty good for himself right now over in Japan. But I just wanted to make that point. He never got the axe. He chose to leave. And again, the Drifter, I think it's just a case where people love to hate the guy. It's like a modern day honky-tonk man. I mean, part of it might just be go-away heat. But look, he comes out and as soon as he starts stringing the guitar, people boo. Right? That's the kind of heel heat you want to have. Once he actually gets in the ring, I'm not overly impressed. He really doesn't do much for me. But there are a lot of guys on that roster, I'm sure, that would kill to have the kind of heat that he has. Marcos from Houston, Texas. What is your favorite Okada-Tanahashi match? I feel like every time these two are in the ring, they outdo their previous match. You're right. That's why their last Wrestle Kingdom match is my favorite one. Wrestle Kingdom 10. I think the Okada-Tanahashi rivalry will go down as one of the greatest of all time. Alberto from Laredo, Texas. Is New Japan Pro Wrestling considered an indie promotion? No. No. They're owned by a company called Bushiroad. And I think they did... Didn't they do like $22 or $25 million in revenue last year? They're far from an indie promotion. Hardy from Hagerstown, Maryland. I was listening to Sound Off 359 and you mentioned that Randy Savage versus Jake Roberts is your favorite WWE feud of all time. I'm not really familiar with it aside from the infamous Rumble 92 spot with Savage eliminating himself. Can you give a recap of the feud and what made it so special? But of course, we'd never miss an opportunity to talk about Randy Savage and Jake the Snake. The thing I loved about the feud, it's funny, you know, you mentioned that my favorite of all, I guess it would be, it's one of my favorites of all time. I don't know if I had to make a list, would it end up in number one, number two? I don't know. But what I loved about it was, as a kid and even now when I go back and watch it, was the sense of realism, how much of a bastard Jake was in that feud. It was dark. It was the kind of dark stuff that you really didn't see in WWF back then. I mean, this guy was sadistic. And the snake bite thing is what stands out. There's a couple of things that stand out to me. It's not just the snake bite. The snake bite thing stands out to a lot of people because it was, I mean, look, it was pretty graphic stuff. I mean, not so much blood and guts and stuff, although there was blood on Savage's arm, but just the idea that this is not a rubber snake. This is not a puppet. This is not animatronics. This is real. This is a king cobra, whether it's defanged or not. I know they tried to build it up. You know, Vince is going crazy. That snake better be devenomized. It better be. And I know the great story about how the snake died 12 days later because Savage poisoned the snake. But this is a real snake just gnawing away at this guy's arm. He's helpless. He's trapped in the ropes. They show kids crying in the crowd. Elizabeth runs down. This is her husband. And she's, Roddy Piper leaves the announce booth to grab Elizabeth. Everyone's running around. Just all this chaos. Nobody knows what to do. And the creepiest fucking looking snake I've ever seen in my life was that cobra when it was kind of sitting up and smiling. You see Jake smiling in the background. I mean, that is... Let me tell you something. You couldn't pay me enough money, devenomized or not, to get bitten by a snake. Okay? Let alone a snake like that. That took balls. And that whole angle was just tremendous. You did that angle today, it would be just as graphic. I mean, it would be just as, just as scarring to a lot of little kids watching. And so then you fast forward to Tuesday in Texas. This was this pay-per-view experiment that they did. And they had two big matches they were promoting. One was the rematch. Undertaker had just won the championship from Hogan by a screw job at Survivor Series. So they were going to have the rematch. And on the undercard, they were going to do Macho Man against Jake the Snake. Macho Man had been reinstated. He was supposed to have been retired, but then this stuff happened with Jake, and so anyway, he got reinstated. And the match, I've said this, the matches that they had during the feud, they only had two matches on TV, and they weren't that great. And the Tuesday in Texas match was nothing. I mean, it was, I don't even know that the match went 5 minutes, and Savage just beat him clean, I think, in the middle with an elbow drop. So in that respect, it was pretty disappointing. But it wasn't about the matches, it was about all the stuff going on around the matches and what happened post-match. When, you know, Jake got his revenge, he ended up DDTing Savage and laying him out after the match. And again, Elizabeth runs down and he ends up grabbing Elizabeth and he slaps her right in the face. And this, again, this is the kind of stuff that you did not see. I know, like in the NWA, they did stuff with Baby Doll and stuff. But in WWF, as cartoony as the company was, you did not see, like, heavy angles like this. They did a lot of really goofy stuff, you know, injury angles and whatnot. And like the next year we had Papa Shango putting a freaking voodoo curse on the Ultimate Warrior. He's throwing up pea soup. They did a lot of stupid shit, but like heavy, serious stuff. And Elizabeth was this beloved character. So to be able to use her and she's trapped in the middle of all this, you really felt for her. And the promos. Here you have two of the best promo guys in the history of the business. Now they've got this real deep personal issue to kind of sink their teeth into here. And the promos leading up to and post-match were just tremendous. Jake just comes across as the slimiest son of a bitch. you've ever seen. Gene Okerlund sold it perfectly when he's literally grabbing Gene and saying, "Oh man, it turned me on to touch her. It turned me on." And Gene's like, "You're a sick man. Get the hell out of here." And Savage had a complete meltdown. He collapses on the floor. "It's my fault. It's my fault." It's maybe a little bit of overacting there, but everything about the feud, the promos, the players involved, I mean, they played their roles perfectly, and it to this day is probably the most memorable feud of that era. And it was so brief. It didn't last that long. It was only a few months. They only had a couple of matches. They did the blow off on a Saturday night's main event special instead of saving it for WrestleMania like I would have. And it was over. That was it. That was the only real crime about the whole thing, is that it could have gone on so much longer, and it never got the payoff that it really deserved to get. And that is the biggest regret. Now, somebody in the Facebook group asked a question, an interesting question this past week. They asked, if Ric Flair did not win the 1992 Rumble, or you had to pick a winner other than Ric Flair to win the 1992 Royal Rumble, who would you pick? Who would have been the best person to win the Rumble and the championship? Because remember, the title was on the line. Who would have been the right person? And I saw a lot of people, Sid, Hogan, Savage, all fine choices. Not one person said Jake the Snake. Until I popped in the thread and I said Jake the Snake. I'd have picked Jake for sure. Jake was in, maybe not physically, but in top form as a heel. I mean, the uber heel during that period. I think it would have been great to see him with the WWF title. He never held any championships in that company. It would have been short-lived. It only would have been a couple of months. But it would have been cool to see him with a belt. And on that, and I gave this some thought here, and I wanted to pitch this and see what people thought. On that Saturday Night's Main Event that they did the month after, which was like the second to last one of that era that they ever did, Hogan and Sid already had heat from what happened at the Rumble finish, right? Okay, so instead of having them tag up on the show the way they did, because on that special it was Hogan and Sid against Ric Flair and The Undertaker, which is a big match. But instead of doing that, why not just build right away, it's going to be Hogan versus Sid at WrestleMania to settle their issues. And so on that show, you have a contract signing for WrestleMania. So that's one feature of that Saturday Night's Main Event special. Hogan and Sid have a contract signing. And they cut promos on each other. The other draw of that special, you could do Randy Savage against The Undertaker. Because The Undertaker had been aligned with Jake for months leading up to the whole thing. They crashed the wedding party after the wedding at SummerSlam. So Undertaker was already kind of linked into that feud. He had formed an alliance with Jake the Snake. So you do that match on that show with the proviso that Savage has to beat The Undertaker in order to earn a championship match at WrestleMania. Because Jake doesn't want any part of Randy Savage. Randy Savage did not win the Royal Rumble. He did not automatically earn himself a trip to WrestleMania. Or I guess winning the Rumble, he would have won the championship. But Jake doesn't want to have anything to do with this guy. But if he could beat The Undertaker, he gets a title shot. Savage has the match won. Jake interferes. He and Undertaker beat the crap out of Savage. Maybe tie him up in the ropes again. Tease another snake bite, only this time Hogan runs down to make the save. I can never understand why nobody ran down the first time to help this guy. But I guess when there's a snake in the ring, I guess I can't blame him. If my friend were tied up in the ropes and there was a King Cobra, I'd be like, "Oh, sorry, dude." I don't know what to do. I mean, let's be honest here. It's a King Cobra. Give me a break. It's, I don't want to go anywhere near that thing. So this time Hogan comes out, makes the save. And I hope none of my friends are listening to this. If they have a snake, they can't rely on me to help them. So Hogan makes the save. Sid runs down. He attacks Hogan. All of a sudden, you've got total chaos to end this episode of Saturday Night's Main Event, to build to WrestleMania 8, to build to your two main events. By the way, you could just substitute Flair for Sid in the same scenario. So I said, Hogan, Sid have a contract signing. Hogan, Sid is the match of WrestleMania. It doesn't have to be Hogan, Sid. It could have been Hogan, Flair. I just assumed that when this person asked the question, they were assuming, oh, Flair never went to WWF. But if Flair did go to WWF and just didn't win the Rumble, you could just substitute Sid, you know, out of the equation and put Flair in there and do the same thing with Ric Flair. And it's Hogan versus Flair. Either way, you know, would be fine. But I love that scenario. I play What If a lot with that period because I'm actually a big fan of some of the stuff they did during that period. I know, like, when you start getting into 93, 94, like, those are the real lean years for the company, and there was a lot of garbage. But 91, 92, 93, there was also a lot of good stuff. And a lot of stuff that I remember fondly from when I was younger. And a lot of times I'll think back, man, if they just would have done this differently, or if they would have done that differently, and it's kind of pointless, I suppose, but it's kind of fun to go back and imagine, what could have been had they played things out a little bit differently than they did. I look at that WrestleMania card, I'm just saying, if it ends up being Savage and Jake for the title, maybe loser leaves town, since Jake was leaving anyway, Hogan versus Flair, you could do Undertaker against Sid, I'd pay for that card. All right, this week in Sound Off History, episode 81 from September 6, 2009, talked about a great episode of Raw with Dusty Rhodes in charge for the night. Great show-long storyline they did with Dusty. This was where they did the angle where Randy Orton laid him out with an RKO at the end of the show, and Cody, who was part of Legacy with Orton and DiBiase, is just seething in the corner as the show goes off the air. The crowd is chanting his name. They wanted so badly for him to go after Orton for what he did to his dad, but he didn't. They really had something with Cody there, and they blew it, and it's too bad. I also argued on this show that Daniel Bryan, deserved to be the next big thing in WWE. And I even predicted that either Bryan or CM Punk would main event a WrestleMania sometime in the next 3 or 4 years. I was only 1 year off. I took Bryan 5 years to get there, but he did it. Episode 181 from October 1st, 2011. Was the first of two sound-offs that week. I had some harsh words for WWE killing the Hell in a Cell concept with these gimmick pay-per-views. Plus my thoughts on the anal-bleeding episode of Raw. God, what a stupid company. Episode 281 from June 30th, 2013. I talked about the death of Matt Bourne, the original Doink the Clown. And I shut down all of the Rock haters who were pissed about him being picked as the cover boy for WWE 2K14. And episode 381 from May 3rd, 2015, I talked about Michelle Beadle turning in her WWE fan card because of their association with Floyd Mayweather. Of course, now she's back in the fold. She's a fan once again. Michelle Beadle is indeed a WWE fan like all of us. She gets pissed, says she'll never watch again, and then inevitably she ends up coming back. I also talked about Billy Corgan joining TNA and what it may foretell. If only I knew then what I know now. I could warn poor Billy. Save your money. Anyway, you could stream or download past episodes of The Sound Off on thesolidmonster.com or iTunes. I've also got the first 10 episodes archived on our YouTube channel. Okay, this is part of the reason why the mailbag was shorter this week. It is now time for our Ultimate Royal Rumble Pool. As many of you know, we had a tremendous outpouring of participation in our Royal Rumble Pool on Facebook this year. A massive, massive thank you goes out to Zach Holker for putting the thing together for the fourth year in a row. It is it really is something, I gotta say. You know, we had over 2,300 people there at the end that participated, and I have to say congrats to the 73 winners. 73 winners we had who drew to the number 23 in their respective Rumble pools. I also drew number 23 in my Rumble pool, so congrats to me. But now it's all boiled down to this. This is what really matters here in the end. It's kind of like Survivor Series that 1 year, I think it was 1990, where they had that ultimate match of survival, where all of the winners, all of the survivors from the earlier matches, they were put into one final Survivor Series match. That's kind of the concept here. And because we had so many people participating and so many winners, and many of our own fans stepped up and said, I want to sweeten the pot. I want to add in a prize or a gift or something. So what I decided is let's have three winners, three ultimate winners. We'll have third place, second place, and of course, first place. The third place winner is going to be the first name that I pick out. So here's how this is going to work. If you remember some of the PayPal Rumbles I've done in the past, I've done three of them. It's going to work the same way. I am using a list randomizer on the internet. And if you want to see it for yourself, you can go to random.org/lists, I think is the URL, and you'll see I have a listing of all 73 winners, myself excluded, and I'm going to literally cut and paste this list into the box, click randomize, and it will basically jumble the list. When the list is jumbled, I'm going to pick number 23, since number 23 was the winner anyway. Randy Orton came out of the Rumble at 23. I will pick number 23, and that person will be the winner. And I'll pick a third place winner first, then we'll do the second place winner, then we'll do the first place winner. So that's how this is going to work. And the third place winner will receive some gear from Matt Harrigan. Shout out to Matt and the Superkick Foundation. Along with a complimentary phone case of their choosing from our friends over at rockbottomcases.com. So that goes to the third place winner. Second place winner will receive a complimentary wrestle crate from Julian Cannon. And the first place winner will receive $100 US sent to them via PayPal by Alvin Siegertz, in addition to a free Sound Off shirt that I will purchase for them, the Sound Off shirt of their choice from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. And of course, all three winners are getting shouted out here on the show today. So, with that being said, we're not going to waste any more time here. I've got 73 names. So here we go. We're going to pick a third place winner. Let's get a drum roll going here. Build the anticipation. The third place winner in the 2017 Solid Monster Sounds Off Royal Rumble contest is Zach Harris. Zach Harris, you are our third place winner. You came in here number 23. That means that you get some swag from our friends over at the Superkick Foundation and a complimentary phone case from rockbottomcases.com. You can reach out to me. I will put you in touch with the parties who will be doling out those prizes. But shout out to Zach, our third place winner here in the Ultimate Royal Rumble pool. And now we're going to go back to the randomizer because we have to pick a second place winner. So who is going to get the complimentary wrestle crate from Julian Cannon? Let's find out right now. As we mix up the names, we're looking for number 23, and our second place winner in the Royal Rumble pool is Stephen Coplin. Stephen C. Coplin, you are the second place winner in the Royal Rumble pool. You're going to get yourself a wrestle crate, courtesy of Julian Cannon, so that's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. You know, in those wrestle crates, you get like 10 or 15 different items. You never know what you're going to get in those things. So congrats to Steven. Now it all comes down to this. The ultimate winner. The first place winner in our 2017 Royal Rumble pool. This is pretty exciting, actually. You know, there were, again, 2,300 plus people who participated in this contest. And so now we're going to find out who the number one winner is. The one who will get to lay claim to being the champion here for 2017. So let's go back to the list. We're going to randomize the names here. We're going to settle on number 23. And here we go. The first place winner in our Royal Rumble pool for 2017, getting themselves $100 plus a free Sound Off shirt, is Alan Ragasa. You are the first place winner in the Royal Rumble 2017 Sound Off pool. Congratulations to Alan, I think, is one of our PayPal donators. So congrats to Alan. That's very cool. You've got yourself $100 thanks to Alvin Siegertz and a free Sound Off shirt. So Alan, if you are listening, what I need you to do is send me a message on Facebook in case your email gets lost among the ones I have to go through. So you can shoot me a message. Let me know what shirt you want, what size you want, and where I'm sending it to, and I will get that taken care of for you. And then Alvin, you'll get in touch with me, and we'll coordinate, and he'll PayPal you the money. So congratulations to all of our winners, Alan, Steven, and Zach, our first, second, and third place winners here in the 2017 Royal Rumble pool. Again, I want to thank everybody who participated. It was just a tremendous outpouring of participation this year, and all it does now is it motivates us when we do our fifth one next year to double that. So instead of having 2,300, let's get 5,000 people. As if Zach didn't have enough enough of an ulcer probably coming off all the work he had to put in here. But Zach, again, you are awesome. Thank you very much for all of your support. This is not something I could have handled on my own. He really did take the bull by the horns here, and he did a tremendous job. So definitely show Zach some love in the group. And thank you to everybody who tuned in this week for the sound off. Again, I apologize for the abbreviated mailbag, but we'll get more back to normal next weekend. And also we'll have Elimination Chamber predictions for the big pay-per-view, among all the other breaking news. And we'll know more by then about Seth Rollins. So there's always something going on here in the world of wrestling. It's a busy season. WrestleMania season is always very busy. I'm also going to have some news coming up soon. I'm just finalizing the details, about a meetup in Orlando WrestleMania weekend. Unfortunately, the way it's looking, I'm not going to be doing another live show like I did last year in Dallas. That was a lot of fun. I was hoping to do another one this year, but logistically, it's just not going to be possible. But I didn't want to do nothing. So at the very least, we are going to have a meetup. I think I have a location set. I'm just kind of working out the details. So in the next few weeks, I hope to have something to announce, and I'll put a Facebook invite up for people who want to respond on there. So I look forward to seeing everybody in Orlando. We're going to have a good time this year, even if WrestleMania sucks. WrestleMania never sucks. You know why? Because if nothing else, we all get to hang out and shoot the shit and talk about whatever it is that we want to talk about. So sometimes that's more fun than the actual events that we go to. I have more fun meeting you guys than I do watching these shows. So stay tuned. I'll have more details very soon coming up on our Orlando meetup. Until next weekend, be well, stay safe. If you're watching the Super Bowl, I was going to say go Patriots, but I really don't give a fuck. I just happen to think they're going to win, so Patriots are my pick. And we'll see you back here next weekend for episode 482. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the big show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Monster sounds off. Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.